Welcome back, everyone, to another Momentum Fit podcast. Today I have Marie with me, and we will be discussing expectations versus reality when it comes to personal training. And this could be with someone who's a new client, or it could be someone who is a long-term client. So we're going to kind of go over what to expect and a lot of the common questions we actually get. And one unique thing that we're going to get into today is actually Marie's actual experience from coming back from her back surgery. So we're going to get into what she's kind of been expecting and what's been like the reality of her training as she's progressed through her recovery period. I want to say everyone hello.
Hi, good morning or good afternoon, whatever time you're tuning in. Mm-hmm. Happy to have you.
It's been a while since we've had Marie on here, so we are super excited. Do we want to go into like new client first, kind of like expectations?
What yeah, do you think? I think that's a great start.
Okay. So generally, you do, I would say, majority of consults with new members coming into the gym. So what would you say is a very common misconception that you may get right off the bat?
First, we get a lot of people who are almost embarrassed or think that we're going to judge them about their, in quotes, being out of shape. That I would say is a resounding, like over the top. Everybody, or they think that we're going to judge them,
right? Right.
And quite frankly, we don't, right? We meet people where they are.
Yeah, I mean, even us as trainers, like we started from the beginning, from nowhere, you know, and it. No one's really paying attention to you as much as you think they are in the gym, you know?
Yeah, you're paying a lot more attention to yourself, and you might think that other people are paying attention to you, but especially in our studio where we're doing primarily personal training and even small group, people are so concerned with what they're experiencing at the time. They want to survive their workout. They're not focused on who you are other than like a new face and wanting to say hi. They're not focusing on what you're doing because they're focused on themselves and getting through their own workout.
Right. And I would even, you know, flip that misconception. So if you do think people are like staring at you in the gym and like, why is everyone looking at me? Like they think I'm, you know, I don't know what I'm doing. Well, it may be that they're inspired by you, that they see that you're maybe struggling, but you're in there like putting the work in, you know, like you're doing the work and, you know, they're inspired by that or they're motivated by that. And they're in, you know, impressed that you're in there like trying to do the work.
I had that yesterday. A client was watching me in my training session with you. And I think she was just watching what I was doing out of almost admiration, or watching me go through some of the hard stuff because I wasn't being quiet about it.
Right. So your struggle could be someone else's inspiration.
Yeah.
You know, because
yeah.
I mean, it's all like perception is reality. So we may perceive it as like, man, I'm failing, but someone else sees you just succeeding.
Yeah. Another expectation that people come in with, and this I hold a huge place of compassion for, is whenever people decide to come in to see us, they're typically very frustrated with where they currently are, and they want it to change yesterday. And the level of patience for how much effort and work and consistency it's going to take to reach their goals, to get them out of that place. I think that people come in thinking that we're going to be able to wave a magic wand and change their mindset, their habits, their at home, you know, dietary, whatever, on top of changing their physical bodies. And they think it's going to happen in 2 weeks. And if it's not big results in 2 weeks, that nothing is going to happen and it's not going to work for them.
Right. Especially when, let's say I'm in contact with someone 3 hours out of a week, you know, like, they may adhere better like in that time frame of the interaction with me, like before coming to see me or right after seeing me. But then, you know, you start to kind of fall into your old ways and it doesn't always stick automatically. So just because I saw you 3 hours out of a week doesn't mean that that's going to necessarily hold over a 2-3 week period. Like it takes time for these things to kind of set in.
Well, it takes time and it takes very diligent, consistent effort. And changing behaviors is always tricky because people want to overhaul things very quickly. And I'm like, okay, so this behavior that you think you're supposed to have, if you look at the behavior that you've had for the last, you know, even 5, 10, 15, 20 years, and you want it to change overnight, that's unrealistic because it took you a long time to like make that behavior concrete and wanting to change it. We have to go back and we have to work on like the foundation, the fundamentals of your day-to-day behaviors that can help you accomplish your goals in the gym.
Right. How long do they say it takes to form a habit?
They say, in quotes, 21 days, but in reality, habits can take anywhere from, like, depending upon the intensity of them, it could be like 30, 60, 90 days to really feel like something is now as easy as breathing, where you don't have to think about it being a new behavior.
Right. I would think at least like 4 to 6 weeks.
Oh, yeah. You know, absolutely.
To make it stick, for sure. And I think one thing, like, talking about a previous experience I had with a client one time, he was very analytical. And so he wanted like constant measurements. So every 2 weeks, I want to do measurements. And one thing that just, it took a while to impress upon him was that, look, like, you're not just a number. You're not a computer. Like, progress isn't always going to be linear.
Right.
You know, we're going to have ups and downs. Mm-hmm. You're going to have peaks. You're going to have valleys. You're going to have bad days of sleep, you're going to have rough days at work, you're going to have stress, family life, whatever it may be, but then you're going to have some great times where you're just excelling and you're hitting, you know, personal best and you're feeling your best and you're just riding this high. And obviously run with that, but on those days when you're not as great, like, let's just get in and let's just do some work. Like, don't try to, like, you know, win everything when you're not at your best.
I think some of that today comes from this, I need to be 1% better every day. And I think that where they fail in explaining that to people is 1% better every single day doesn't mean that that thing that you're fixated on needs to improve 1% every day. I think it could be your mindset around it, or if I am not having a super high day and I'm in a low, am I allowing myself to have some grace around it so that I can get bigger results on the other side.
Right. And I think a lot of that could be attributed to, like, say, social media.
Yeah.
You know, all these gurus with these, like, perfect morning routines of getting up at 4 a.m. and doing a cold plunge and meditating for an hour and having a perfectly balanced breakfast and this and that. And it's like, well, I mean, obviously you don't really work for a living, nor do you probably have kids. Like, this isn't real life.
Well, that is the stuff that drives me nuts. I'm like, okay, so if your morning routine starts at 4 a.m. and you're able to put 4 to 6 hours of, in quote, self-care into that morning routine, I don't know what you do with the rest of your day, but I know that I wouldn't be able to get anything done.
They'd probably take a long nap because they got up at 4 a.m. and they're very tired because they were up all night posting their content on social media.
That's true. That's true.
But I would think, I mean, obviously, like, stuff that you see on social media, it's very extravagant. It's, you know, to catch your eye. It's for engagement. But probably what you don't see is the actual, like, the boring basic stuff that they're probably actually doing that works. And that it's always worked.
Mm-hmm.
Forever.
What actually gets people results and we see progress in are the very mundane, consistent effort. And it is boring. It's very boring. I can tell you that from, like, my post-operative rehab side is the foundational stuff of what I've had to do and that I still have to do. It's boring. Like, it's mind-numbing to me sometimes, and I get frustrated with it, but I do it because it works.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, I would say the majority of my training, it revolves around the boring, you know, squat, push, pull, hinge, everything pretty basic. And then just kind of fill in some fun stuff that I want to do to, you know, increase my, you know, workout satisfaction. Or maybe something that's a little bit more motivational, you know.
We do that with clients a lot where they come in and they think they want to try this exercise that they may have seen on Instagram, which is one of my least favorite phrases ever to hear out of a client's mouth is, hey, I saw this thing on Instagram. But if they come in and they're curious about a type of movement or they see something that they would like to try, sometimes that's like the dangling carrot we use to get them to do the boring stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, well, if you do this first, then we'll let you try that. But that thing that excites them, those types of movements aren't typically the things that they get results out of.
Right. I mean, it's a dog and pony show when it comes down to it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's probably something that you can't even like load with enough, you know, weight to actually see any type of progression either.
Yeah.
It's usually some type of like balancing act, you know.
the squats on the stability ball on top of the Bosu ball on top of holding, you know, that type of stuff, it kills me. And it's definitely for show. I mean, the things that get the likes.
Right. Like if you could follow these people around for their actual workouts, you would see them doing
the boring stuff.
Because that is always what has worked, and it will continue to be what works all the time.
Yeah.
So let's talk about your training right now. So it's been how long since back surgery?
So this second back surgery, it's been I'm slightly past the 6 month mark. And it being the second one, it's definitely different.
Okay. So what was your expectation, let's say, at the 3 month mark?
So
post-surgery.
If nothing else, I have a very strong mental game, and I like to be able to put my head down and do the hard work. And sometimes I could be a little hard-headed. I'm going to put that in like, not a little. I can be a lot hard-headed I get fixated on things that I want to accomplish. And so for me, around the 2 month mark, I was feeling pretty great. And then in between the 2 and 3 month mark, I developed this weird lateral lumbar shift. And so I had a huge regression, and I didn't necessarily understand why the regression happened. Took a picture of my body, sent it to my surgeon. I was like, mm-hmm. Yo, what's going on? I don't understand. I've been working on my stability. I've been working on my strength. I should be able to continue progressing. And he's like, you do know that we went in and we've removed more of your structure, so your structure is less stable.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going to be something that you battle. So my expectations were that I would be able to continue to progress and just keep feeling better. And that hasn't been the case with this surgery.
Right. So you were coming up a peak, and then you went into a valley.
Oh, it was a huge valley.
Okay. So again, it's not always linear.
Definitely not linear. And I would say over the last 6 months, it's been a roller coaster. There are days that I feel amazing. Mm-hmm. Excuse me, I almost cursed. There are days that I feel amazing. And then there are days that I wake up and I feel like I've been run over by a truck.
And so what's your mindset on those days when you don't feel your best?
My mindset is I'm going to go for a walk, and then I'm going to move my body to the best of my ability today. And if that means not doing something so that I can rest, recover, heal, I'm willing to do that because I know that it'll pass. And even if I had something in my mind that I want to do, I will kind of remind myself that I have to meet me where I am. And that day where I am, if it's a low, then I have to meet myself down there.
Right. And do you use some type of like accountability, someone to hold you accountable for this?
I mean, I've been asking you and Mackenzie to train me. There's Mick who's doing my physical therapy. Stephanie is also working with me on the physical therapy side. So I feel like I've surrounded myself with kind of like not just a recovery team, but a team to help me get through some of it so that I don't have to be the one who is consistently thinking about everything that I need. I can lean into you guys mm-hmm. for the support, for the structure, for the accountability, for the training, so that I can just kind of show up and do my part
right.
and do the work.
Right. So you have a support system.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So even us as trainers, we have a support system.
Do you want to know why I like it so much? I don't have to think. I get to put my head down. I get to do the work, and I get to trust you guys with the safety in my movement and to give me the feedback that I need. And it's like a magical hour out of a day that I don't have to think about all of the things that I typically think about.
Mm-hmm. And that right there is the ideal client. Honestly.
Like just to put my head down and do the work.
Yeah. Well, just someone who doesn't overthink things. You know,
yeah.
I mean, it's okay to ask the question like, so why are we doing this exercise? Why mm-hmm. are we doing this? So you just want to be educated.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine, but I don't think we should do this, or I don't want to do this. Okay, well, why not? I'm trying to do the things that you need.
Yeah, I will say that from a trainer perspective, that is frustrating whenever people hire us to help them, but then they don't trust us to, like, they, I'm going to back that up. It's almost like they want to be right about something, and instead of trusting us to do our jobs for them,
mm-hmm.
or to be their guide and help them move through something, they want to tell us no and have control over it. And I think it stems from fear a lot of times.
Right, right. Or something they read, or something someone told them.
Yeah, that's true.
And the thing with all that information that people are gathering on social media or TV or whatever, like, we see that information too. Mm-hmm. And obviously, this is our job. This is our expertise. So we're able to decipher what actually works and what doesn't work with that information. So we see the same things that you guys see. So when you come and like, oh, why aren't we doing this? Or why aren't we doing this? Okay, because I deem that that's not good for you.
Yeah.
And I'm putting your safety first here.
Well, our educational background. So being exercise physiologists, right? Like, we are scientists of movement, of how the body responds to an external stimulus, of whether it's a load, whether it's something we're trying to increase range of movement, even the hormonal response the body has to mm-hmm. training. Like, that's what we have our education in.
Right.
And for people to, I mean, it is the people can get information anywhere, right? The internet. And if they see it on the internet, I don't know why people still haven't learned. Not everything we read on the internet is not true. But understanding that I'm not going to go into like my tax accountant and I'm not going to tell him how to do his job because I didn't get that education. That's not what I like. I trust him to do his
right.
job.
Because you read an article in Forbes magazine or something like
right,
that.
Right, right. So.
Yeah, so exactly. And I think another thing, I keep accidentally covering my mouth. a lot of what works for, say, me or works for you may not work for someone else.
No.
Or what works for me may not work for you. So every, you know, body is made up differently. I know for a certain exercise, so let's say, for instance, when I do like a back squat, for my body type, it is a very quad dominant exercise. Mm-hmm. Where someone else, they may feel it more in their glutes, you know, or their back based on their mobility or something like that. So understand a lot of times that we're looking at how you move, and with that feedback, we find exercises that target those muscle groups the best for you. And that is, you know, what we gain from years of experience of doing this stuff.
Yeah, it's a prescription to the individual.
Exactly.
Not to the masses.
Right.
Because I've never seen a human come in our doors that looks like Anatomy Man.
Nobody.
Nobody. Like the Anatomy Man that we learned in school.
Right.
I have never met a human that looks like that.
No. Like perfectly symmetrical.
Right.
Yeah. That's not real. That's not right. The real world.
Like both of us have extremely long torsos. Yep. Our bodies are going to look differently when we squat versus somebody who, let's say, has a shorter torso and longer legs.
Yeah. And I have super short femurs that I found out. My tibia and my fibula are actually pretty long.
And I'm opposite. Femur. I have a long femur and short tib fib.
So yeah, so the makeup's different. Like, so for me, getting into a squat position is super easy. I'm able to keep a very upright torso, my chest tall, you know, whereas someone else who may have a, you know, different body type may be hunched over a lot in their squat. Mm-hmm. So it just, you know, your anatomy dictates, you know, your movement a lot of times. Obviously, we want to work on progression for full range of motion, for, you know, health, quality of life purposes, but we again will dictate those exercises based on the feedback that we get from your body type and how you move.
Yeah.
So that's just, you know, I think that's one major thing that clients, I think, don't understand.
From an expectation standpoint, yeah.
Right. Right.
People aren't cookies. We don't come out of a machine that makes us the same shape.
Exactly. So just, you know, knowing that information and just being able to educate a client on that, you know, so just be open to it.
Yeah. And I would say ask questions, right? Like, what kind of movement are you capable of doing that we're trying to get you to, right? Like asking us questions like that, like what would this ideal movement look like for my body?
Exactly.
That would be a great question from a client versus why aren't you letting me do X exercise over there?
Right. Yeah. Why am I not doing what they're doing over there?
Yeah.
Someone completely different.
Right.
And you don't know where they're at in their fitness journey. They could be a beginner, intermediate, advanced. Like, you have no idea, but yet you're worried about what they're doing over there instead of focused on what we're doing here. So absolutely. So going back to your training, so what do you think over the next, let's say, 3 months? What is your expectation?
I'll continue to improve strength. That's something that I feel like is finally starting to come back a little bit faster. I'm excited about getting stronger again because I love being strong. I do know that spinally loading is not really something that would be beneficial for me long term. Mm-hmm. But what my expectations are really, as long as I can lean into you guys and you keep training me, I'll do whatever.
Right.
Like, my expectations around it, I just want to continue to get stronger.
So there's a lot of openness and vulnerability there.
Yeah.
In your training,
yeah,
where you're at this point in your life. And I would say that that's kind of one thing that I've kind of struggled with over the last couple of years, because as I've gotten older, it's like, I want to work out every day because I enjoy to work out.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that, you know, with the job, with the kid, all this stuff going on, it's like, there's some days I just feel burnt out and I'm like, you know what? Probably I should just go for a walk.
I love walking. It has helped me so much. I would say prior to the original back injury 2.5 years ago,
mm-hmm,
I didn't look at walking the same way that I look at it now.
Yeah. I mean, it's very therapeutic.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say it's something that I learned. A, I don't have access to running anymore, but being able to go for a walk, if that is the movement that I get that day, I'm okay with it.
Right. And I mean, I am now okay with that.
It did take a minute.
Previously, it, you know, it's like, well, all I did was walk today. I didn't do anything.
Right.
You know?
In quotes, I didn't do anything.
Right.
Right. Like.
Right. But now, just, you know, how much better it makes me feel, the mental clarity, everything I gain from walking.
Mm-hmm.
It's very beneficial for anyone.
I would say it's kind of an unsung hero in exercise.
So if you have a trainer who tells you that walking isn't good, then...
Fire them. Fire them real quick.
Run very, very fast away from them. All right. Well, anything else you want to talk about your training?
Not in this one. Maybe we can cover it in another podcast.
Yeah, that'd be great. We can turn this into a whole little series as we kind of get through your training.
Cool.
That'd be a very cool idea to do. All right, guys. Well, thanks for tuning in. Hope you enjoyed that. If you have any questions, please feel free to relay them to me, Marie, or other trainers that you may want to hear on this podcast. And we will check you guys later.
Bye.